It's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 86690 Red Eye. Good morning. Welcome. Thank you so much for being here. We couldn't do this without you. Well, actually, we could. It's just
we could do it. Yeah, it wouldn't. Right. There wouldn't be a point to doing it.
That's true. There wouldn't be a point to be doing this without you,
listeners. Come on. Who do they think they are?
They're deplorables. Listeners, who needs them?
These ultra MAGA type deplorables. Listeners, as our program directors across the country are waking up going, I'm sorry, what did they say? Insulting the audience? Am I dreaming? Am I having a nightmare, a work-related nightmare again? Because I'm pretty sure I just heard them insulting the audience.
They don't need the audience. I heard them say they don't need the audience. They could still do it by themselves. And I heard them say there wouldn't be a point, but they could still do it.
Oh, we could do it. And we'd still be important. I could say this honestly. We'd be as important as we've ever been. That's right.
Well, at least we haven't called anybody a fascist or a Nazi.
No,
right.
We haven't done that.
We haven't called anybody a fascist or a Nazi. The only time we have used that is in relation to the Democrat standards of what a fascist or a Nazi is.
Right.
Right?
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Which was more of a point to demonstrate how they act.
Right. You're all just a bunch of pinko commies.
Right. Nazis and fascists? Pinko commies? Oh, yeah, definitely.
Pinko, I mean.
Pinko. Has anybody said pinko?
I don't know. It's like,
where'd that even come from?
I like her music.
Pinko.
She's a wonderful artist.
Bunch of pinko. What? Speaking of Edward Snowden. So.
But the memes that Snowden, why haven't they drafted him yet?
Well, no, that was, the media was actually focused on that saying, well, you know, I mean, technically, every male up to the age of 65, between 18 and 65, is eligible for the draft. His lawyer came back and said, no, he doesn't have military experience. See, he doesn't. Well, I mean, he had intel experience, so there's that. His lawyer, but he's not, he's never, I don't know, you got to ask his president, Vladimir Putin.
Well, I'm going to guess that the system of jurisprudence not to go in the military might be a tad bit different than here in the United States.
Uh-huh.
Just guessing.
Yeah. Well, you know, he had been seeking Russian citizenship for a while. I wonder if his lawyers tried to withdraw that application a couple of weeks ago. No. Did we say Russian citizen? No.
We don't want
No. Yeah, well, okay, too late for that.
And the whole point was, we started this, download our Red Eye Radio app today, and if our great listeners can't listen live when we're on the air on one of our hundreds upon hundreds of great radio station affiliates, well, then you can listen on your own, alone. You can drink and listen to Red Eye alone.
Now, the thing with Steven Seagal is, he's over 65. So he can't serve. And the thing there is that's a missed opportunity because he clearly has experience. I've seen all the documentaries where he, you know, all of his service is heavily documented in all those documentaries he was in.
Wasn't he an auxiliary police officer down south the last I heard about him?
He was, next thing I know. He's the Karine Jean-Pierre of Russia. It's weird.
Oh, I can't make it through. I've got to stop. I'm coughing now.
can you imagine, though? I mean, that's all of a sudden you get called up. You're a Russian, and you get called up. And there's Steven Seagal at boot camp. He's the guy. He's doing all the training at boot camp. This is the hand-to-hand combat portion.
I'm Steven Seagal. On my right here is our intelligence officer, Edward Snowden.
Snowden just stares into the eyes.
and then they find out that the morale has really gone up because Americans are in charge.
Right. I mean,
by the way, I do want to thank the people that did figure out that yesterday was my birthday and sent me a nice birthday thing.
Oh, yeah. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Belated birthday.
Yes, I had a wonderful, wonderful day as
good.
The bachelor that I am. Yeah. You know, it was basically a pool party, you know, young mm-hmm. bikini clad women mm-hmm. hanging around me all day. Mm-hmm. Well, either it was that or I got my flu shot and I cut the lawn.
Yeah.
I did treat myself yesterday because by 4 o'clock I was so tired I went to sleep and slept 6 hours.
Yeah.
That's the most I've slept in a long time. That was my birthday present to myself.
No, I think that's at a certain age it really is about, man, no, hold on a second. What do you want for your birthday? Sleep!
I'm no longer going to sleep at 4 o'clock because I work overnight. That's just the time I go to sleep at this age.
Yeah.
No matter whether I work at night or not.
Right. Sleep.
I was really comfortable having dinner yesterday at 3 p.m.
Well, get used to that. Do you have a coupon?
I ate at home.
Yeah.
I don't go out much. It's me, 3 p.m. dinner, and hang with the cat.
All right. You should slow down, though. You're going to overdo it. Hopefully, you weren't driving.
No, I don't drive anymore. No.
Yeah. Just right there at the house.
Oh, boy. And I will say this. So I did call my dad, knew I was busy. Otherwise, I know he would have called me at the beginning of the day. And when I called him, though, I said, I'm in the middle of doing something right now. I'll call you back. He goes, no, wait. And then, of course, my 96-year-old father gets on the old untuned piano and sings "Happy Birthday" to me.
Oh, all right.
So that was,
you know, sometimes the those older untuned pianos actually sound the best. It's nostalgia. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I mean, my grandmother had one for the longest time, and really, it wasn't about affordability. It was about nobody in the town that she lived in knew how to tune a piano. Who are you going to call, right? But that always reminded me. My mom would often sit down and play when we were there. And they just have that just will always bring back memories for me.
Well, you can't tune a fish, but you can tune a piano.
Yeah.
Is that REO Speedwagon?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sure is.
I wasn't sure. It just popped in my head when you said that. It's like,
yeah.
REO Speedwagon. Was that when they were still progressive or when they went total pop?
No, I think that was the beginning of the turn.
Okay.
I think that album was, yeah.
You know,
before High Infidelity, which was mind-boggling how big that album was for them. Massive.
I'm old enough to when there were some hippies still saying, "Hey, man, you hear the new Speedwagon album?"
Yeah.
I'm old enough where I remember when John Denver was not viewed as a pop artist, but an eclectic artist in colleges.
Mm-hmm. I'm old enough to remember when they were just wagon. Band started back in like it was the late 1800s.
All right, we've got a ton of audio cuts coming up. In fact, next we have to play the one from the mayor of New York yesterday.
Yeah,
I needed this. I haven't laughed in a while. Things have been so horrible lately.
Yeah,
I haven't laughed on the show in a while.
And a lot of serious stuff going on.
I needed this, but we have some interesting audio and some interesting stories out there. Oh, and plus, Manchin doesn't get his energy permitting proposal. Well, he pulled it because he knew he couldn't get the votes.
Right, yeah. So he went to Schumer and said, all right, we're done.
And, you know, he's like, I can't believe Republicans. Stop it. Stop faking.
Well, it's interesting because they needed the votes, and this is what happened, basically. McConnell whipped enough of the Republicans up to say, okay, no, we're not going to be on board. They needed 60 to attach that to the stopgap spending bill. And what's interesting is that whole spending bill thing didn't get, I mean, the deadline is this week.
Yeah.
And didn't get any media play like it does when it's a Republican-controlled Senate.
Yep.
And so Manchin just said, all right, we're not going to get it done. We're going to have to get, you know, the stopgap done by the end of the week. So,
well, again, he said he was going to do something of significance and that Republicans would like.
Right.
You know, and he didn't.
Nope.
And we went through that yesterday.
Yep.
He didn't do it.
Nope.
All right, 866-90-RED-EYE.
Did you know that up to half of all major engine failures are due to poor cooling system maintenance? That's a lot of downtime and can cost drivers big. You expect a lot from your engine, which is why the cooling system must be a part of your maintenance routine. Here's a tip to keep your cooling system in shape and your engine running smooth. Most cooling system issues are due to lack of coolant caused by leaks. Perform a pressure test to make sure no leaks are present. While this may cause the system to fail, you want it to fail in the shop, not on the road. If your pressure test uncovers any leaks in the system, have them repaired by a professional technician immediately.
This report brought to you by Lubrifiner, engineering filters that are built to do more for heavy-duty fleets since 1996.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Curley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, the mayor of New York, Eric Adams, was out again yesterday promoting New York City in a speech. And promoting New York and New York City. And as he has done before, you remember he put up the billboards in Florida trying to convince people in New York to come back. That hasn't happened. In fact, a record number of New Yorkers in that time where he put the billboards up did the opposite.
Right.
Went to Florida. But here he is yesterday. It's not that he complimented New York. It's that in order to do so, he insulted Kansas.
We have a brand. New York has a brand. And when people see it, it means something. You know, when we go there, it's not. Kansas doesn't have a brand. When you go there, okay, you're from Kansas. No. Well, you know what? But New York has a brand.
There you go. And everybody's behind him giggling and laughing and talking. Yeah, Kansas.
People in Kansas.
People in Kansas.
On.
You people in Kansas. Why don't you have a brand?
You haven't been working on your branding.
Don't you understand imagery is everything to a Democrat? You must have imagery. Substance doesn't matter. You have to have a brand.
You need to get on a plane, go to New York, and learn how to do it.
Right. Learn how to get a brand. What's wrong with you, Kansas?
What are you focusing on? What are you focusing on if you're not focusing on your brand? Do you even have a social media page, Kansas?
Yes.
Seriously, man.
Get a brand.
What is wrong with you, Kansas? Wow. Just complete arrogance.
And the arrogance behind, I mean, laughing. They're like laughing. Kansas.
I don't have a brand.
New York.
I don't have a brand.
Now, what I don't know is, did he discuss what the brand is now?
I don't know, but I heard they're going to remaster The Wizard of Oz, and she's going to say, Toto, we're not in New York anymore.
Well, what is the brand? And by the way, in front of him, he's got a little sign in front of him. Get stuff done.
Yeah, okay. Well, clearly the people of Kansas aren't getting stuff done.
Well, as we know. If you were to say, what's the brand of New York right now, what would it be? Think about it. And I'm being serious. I'm not trying to be over the top or anything. The first
right
thing
now would be crime.
It would be crime, mask mandates, bail reform, weak DAs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what comes to mind to me.
The massive cost in an already expensive city. The cost of inflation.
Yeah, it's not the brand you want.
No,
but it's the brand that is earned, because that's exactly what the leaders of New York have put together for the people of New York, and the people of New York keep electing the same people with the same mindset.
It's funny how they have no, you know, again, self-awareness. You know, we talked about, you know, Biden earlier, and we talked about when he talked about gas prices, just lower them, just do it. As if I say it, it means something.
Right.
That the imagery that exists out there, you know, the forgiveness of student loans when it's not forgiven, if we can convince people that this is a fairy tale world where magic happens. Oh, it's all imagery. And the same there with Adams. A brand. We have a brand. They don't have a brand. I don't give a damn about your brand. I give a damn about the reality of where your city is right now.
Right, right.
If I live there, do I feel safe?
And
whatever other brand you have means nothing if you're allowing criminals to walk the street and people of your city are afraid.
Yeah.
Because you haven't done what you said you would do if you became mayor.
Kansas, who do you think you are with your lower crime? You're not even trying. Lower cost of living, lower crime. Who do you think you are? How dare you, Kansas?
One of my Kansas brands is the fact that any band that could come up with the band Kansas with classical pop rock, as they did, driving all the way across Kansas back and forth to do shows in the 70s, there must be something inspiring there.
Well, you know, I think that, I think Kansas needs to sit down and think about what they've done. I think, honestly, they need to focus on their branding and try. Just make an effort, would you?
Let's go branding.
Let's go branding.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, the arrogance from the left.
Oh, it is. It's just amazing.
It's and they laugh about it.
Yeah, the arrogant.
They're proud of that moment.
And the arrogance based on complete ignorance, too.
Yeah.
Facebook fact checkers by day, radio hosts at night, Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Okay, my favorite story of the day.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
The people for the ethical treatment of animals is urging women to put their foot down against meat-eating men by withholding sex. Here's their statement. We all know them, the suburban men with beer bottles in hand, brandishing tongs while cooking sausages on their expensive gas grills.
Well, that's now I'm hungry.
That's a stereotype, isn't it? These barbecue masters believe that they can prove their masculinity to themselves and their fellow humans through the consumption of meat.
Or maybe we're just hungry.
Not only hurting animals, but also harming the planet, began Elena Waldman in a blog post introducing the initiative.
Technically, I didn't hurt the animal.
The science,
in every case.
The science speaks for itself. A study published in the journal Plus One found that men contribute significantly more to the climate catastrophe than women, primarily through their meat consumption, continued Waldman before announcing that that's why PETA's proposing a strike on sex with meat-eating men to persuade them to go vegan. Quote, men need to take accountability for their actions. Now that research shows that their impact on the climate is so disproportionately large, they should have to take steps to rectify that. The research cited by PETA, no idea whether it has any credibility or not, but the research cited
by Pam Anderson did it, I'm sure it's thorough and peer-reviewed. I'm almost positive.
Pam Anderson and withholding sex. I don't know why that just doesn't mix for me. It's unclear why PETA has decided to focus on male eating habits as the sole measure of total gender contributions to climate change. The beauty and makeup industry contributes to environmental disrepair through plastic pollution, ocean chemical pollution, deforestation, and air pollution. The beauty industry also is plagued by the controversy of animal testing per other environmental groups. PETA did not clarify whether it would support a similar strike geared towards meat-eating women. For all the fathers who are still grilling meat but want their children to have a healthy future on a habitable planet, it's time for a life style change. The organization offers a free vegan starter kit for men persuaded by the strike.
What's in the kit? I gotta know.
So this is the thing. Okay, I eat meat. I'm assuming that I will say this. Every barbecue I've been to where the man may be doing the cooking, the women are eating the meat.
Yeah. Well, that's the fault in this entire approach, is that...
I know where you're going.
In most cases, both the man and the woman are eating meat.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say that the woman really doesn't want him... I thought you were going to Hillary it. The woman really doesn't want to eat meat, but the woman simply reacts to what the man is doing because the woman doesn't have a mind of her own.
Well, Hillary thinks that.
Remember?
That's, yeah.
No, that's
she
right.
May, yeah, that's, she may think that with her logic, but the reality is that the women, if they are vegan, they're already trying to be an influence on their boyfriend or husband if he's a meat eater. And chances are they're eating.
You know, the other thing here, it shows you the liberals that believe that that sex is merely another transaction that you do.
Right.
It's a transaction that you use to get your way one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
That's their belief.
Right.
It's not about the bonding of two human beings together.
Well,
it is simply a transaction that should be used to convince somebody to do something, otherwise you withhold it.
Right. Or that in some cases it also implies that it is not 100% consensual, that they're doing it out of something other than the desire.
Right, exactly, right.
Well, why is PETA, why are they such misogynists?
Oh, we could go into all different areas here.
If you got a grill master at home, ladies, look, I'm great at giving advice. So listen up. You might want to write this down. If you got a grill master at home, then you should tell him these are your choices. Bean sprouts. Or you and I sleep in separate rooms from now on.
Is it different if I use an electric grill powered by wind turbines or solar panels?
Yes.
If I don't use charcoal or natural gas, do I get a break from PETA on this? Because remember, they're not talking about anything about animals. We're talking climate change here. This is what their argument is, climate change.
Well, first of all, they are assuming, too, that it is, you know, not gender neutral. And how dare they take that approach? The agenda has been, you know, that you ignored the entire agenda. I don't know why they think that this is a good promotional item for them.
This is the Newsom effect. They're in their own bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody around them thinks the same way.
Mm-hmm.
They think...
All three of them?
They think... Because think about this. You know, okay. Honey, I know that you've been barbecuing and we've been eating the meat for a long time, but I've been becoming vegan, and if you don't stop it, I'm withholding sex.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. I get the kids. See you later.
Well, again, and so they're implying that women are mindless.
Yes.
And engage in that behavior because they're mindless, and they're telling women they should also remain mindless and follow PETA's directive.
Mm-hmm.
Since you can't think for yourself.
Well, we had talked about that with Hillary, and feminism is dead anyway. The liberal transgender activist movement has completely killed liberal feminism. It's just destroyed it, because when a man can be that, and that's what you should do now, simply say, well, no, sorry, I'm a woman, therefore, you haven't addressed this here, so I'm going to continue to barbecue. Well, you're not, you're transphobic. Don't say that,
mm-hmm.
PETA.
Yeah.
But with the whole Hillary thing to begin with, that was the most insulting thing towards women that you could possibly say. Why didn't I win? Well, because women tend to follow what their boyfriends and their husbands say.
Yeah.
Basically, women are Stepford voting wives, and whatever the man says is what they will do.
And whatever PETA says.
Yes. Whatever PETA says, women will do.
Wow.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what's in the vegan starter kit, wouldn't it?
I'd like to order one. Hey, convince me. Go ahead. What's in the vegan? And don't say literature. No. No. No, I want something that's going to be tasty. I want
Morningstar meat fake meat patties.
Maybe that would be a start. The
tofurkey,
or the Beyond Meat.
Beyond Meat, yeah.
I saw I saw on a menu the other day. It was, they had two similar items, and one of them, it just said the word beyond, and I thought, oh, I know a lot of people that get that wrong. Because if you don't put that, if you don't, in your mind, put together while reading the menu and ordering, and it was a fast food place, then you could order the, well, I want the beyond the, if you don't know it's the beyond meat, then you could be ordering.
Yeah, I wouldn't have known beyond. That. I wouldn't have known that.
Exactly. It just said beyond. It didn't say anything about a vegan patty or anything else. It said the beyond before the name of the sandwich.
Who was doing the one? Was it Burger King that was doing the meatless burger?
Yeah, they all did it.
Did they stop doing it?
Yeah, they're okay. Abandoning. They're okay. Going to, well, they're in the plan of ramping it out of the menus. It's not working.
We could have told them that.
People come to you for fast food, for junk food.
Beef.
Serve what people want. There wasn't a demand.
Well, were the Burger King managers all men and PETA got to their wives?
I do know that they grill.
Well, they do grill, don't they?
It's yeah.
They grill.
Yeah, this is the stupidity of the PETA activists.
Yeah, they're really getting stupid.
Believing that, you know, well, see, that you should do this. Who was it that was saying, what group was it that was saying, you should do the same thing if, don't have sex with men who voted Republican.
Oh, yeah, yeah, that was, I remember that, yeah.
Well, okay, then if the guy, I'm not having sex with anybody who voted Republican, and if the guy wants to lie about it, he can, how are you going to know? I mean, and are you really, really that loose on your standards that you wouldn't already know who the person is and how they think before you do that?
It's transactional. That's what it is. It's not anything special. It's just you're doing something to get to get pleasure, and he wants pleasure from you, and that's all it's about. There's nothing else to sex to these radical leftists. Nothing.
Right.
It's simply a transaction that you make.
Yeah. That's
take this pleasure away from them because it's only pleasure on his side, not, you know.
As if it actually works that way.
I know. It's amazing. Just amazing. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. I'm Gary McNamara along with Eric Harley.
Let's get the latest on Hurricane Ian with his eyes set on Florida. Already the effects of Ian being felt before. Good morning, Richard. We've got you now. Give us the latest on Hurricane Ian.
Well, Ian is located about 75 miles off the southwest coast of Florida this morning, and we're already starting to see some of the effects of this in the Florida Keys and southwestern Florida with strong tropical storm force winds. Hurricane force winds are still sitting offshore, but over the next few hours, we'll start to see that start to roll into southwestern Florida. Areas from Sarasota on down through Fort Myers and Naples will start to feel the effects of the hurricane in full here over the next few hours. And, of course, the storm surge component will definitely be a concern for southwestern Florida in the coming hours as well.
What do you expect as we go throughout the day? And then after it makes landfall, there is some data that shows that it could go back over the Atlantic. What do we know right now?
Yeah, that definitely looks like that's going to be the case. The storm track takes it across central Florida, brings it up across the I-4 corridor, and then eventually over into northeastern Florida. And, of course, it looks like areas from Marineland northward up through the Jacksonville metro and stretching on up through the Georgia and South Carolina coast will feel the effects of this as well, as they'll be looking at the potential for a storm surge, probably winds gusting to hurricane force for northeastern Florida. Tropical storm force winds will definitely be found in the coastal Carolinas on down through coastal Florida. So the 95 corridor will definitely start feeling the effects of this in the coming hours and the coming days as all of the moisture gets pushed on up into portions of northeastern Florida and the rest of the southeast. A lot of concerns for flooding in the coming days as well. Rainfall amounts of anywhere from 18 to 24 inches are possible for central Florida and for possibly parts of the Carolinas.
All right. Broadcast meteorologist Richard Llewellyn with the Weather Channel. Richard, thank you for your time. We greatly appreciate it. And we will keep you updated on Hurricane Ian.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across the USA and around the world, we are Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. If you can't listen live overnight to one of our great radio station affiliates, well, then you can download our app and listen when and where you want. Eric, both you and I just looking at the latest update from the National Hurricane Center, and Ian has been upgraded to a Cat 4 hurricane.
Yes, strengthening rather quickly in the latest hours. In fact, let's turn to WBAP, our flagship station here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and meteorologist Brad Barton is there and keeping his eye on Hurricane Ian. Brad, what do you know this morning?
Well, we know that it slowed down overnight. Eric, good morning, guys.
Hey.
It slowed down to about 10 miles per hour. Pressure, central pressure, has fallen to 942 millibars, and that would be like 27.82 inches of mercury. So that's really low pressure. Mm. It has really developed overnight, and the maximum sustained winds are now up to 140 miles per hour. And again, we have to add, those are maximum sustained winds, and there will be winds, gusts that are stronger even than that. The category for a Cat 4 is 130 to 156 mile per hour wind, so it's right in the mid-range of a potentially catastrophic Category 4. Well-built framed homes can sustain severe damage with loss of most of the roof structure and some exterior walls. Most trees will be snapped or uprooted. Power lines will be down. Power poles will be down. And power outages could last into weeks or possibly months with a Category 4 storm. And I noticed as you were following up just a few minutes ago, as I was driving in, they have extended the hurricane warning area a little bit farther to the south. So we're looking at Fort Myers and Naples as potential landfall areas, and that might be where we would see the greatest storm surge. But the winds are going to be covering probably a 75-mile to 80-mile-wide swath as it moves from southwest to northeast and just cuts across the state of Florida, kind of like a stripe on a tie.
Sure.
Brad, when do you see it making a landfall? And if it stays out there longer, if it continues at its current pace, can it still get stronger, or do you think it will get weaker?
Well, there is a little bit of upper-level wind shear in the atmosphere that we're hoping will take just a little starch out of it. Now, where it is now at 140, it would have to be strong enough wind shear to take another 10 miles per hour out of the sustained wind speeds. That's asking a lot, but we do believe there is a chance of slight weakening before the storm actually makes a full landfall, but that's still several hours away. We're since it's moving at 10 miles an hour and it's still about 50 or 60 miles offshore, we have another 5 or 6 hours before it makes a full landfall. We're talking about the eye wall itself making landfall on the Florida coast.
Brad, you have decades of experience here in Tornado Alley. One of the threats of a hurricane is spotting tornadoes, and Ian has already started doing that. How is that different than like in Tornado Alley when guys or anybody, any meteorologist that is following it, I was going to say guys like you, people like you, that follow these storms in supercell activity and that kind of thing, and we know that, you know, that potential maybe days ahead of time, but in a hurricane, those tornadoes can pop up rather quickly. How is it much different than supercell activity? Does it happen faster, or is that just my perception?
No, I think it probably happens in greater numbers, Eric. This is just a huge convective complex. A lot of times we'll see a storm that already, a massive thunderstorm that has its own, you know, counterclockwise rotation and its own mesocyclone, and it produces one or possibly two tornadoes as it travels from generally from southwest to northeast. But in this case, you have a tremendous amount of convective activity. It's almost like the igniters around a jet engine. You know, there are several of these igniters that are inside the eye walls of the storm, and any one of them could produce multiple tornadoes. So you're right. That's another threat, and especially as it moves across the landmass. It's such a large storm. The one thing I'm concerned about right now is it's been raining so long and so heavily over areas of Florida. When the really heavy stuff starts moving in, then again, that 2 to 3 feet rainfall estimate for some places is really not out of the realm at all.
Wow. It's, you know, I guess from afar, if you look at Florida, they've had their share, maybe more than their fair share, of hurricanes over the years. And one might think, well, of course, they know how to respond to a hurricane, and certainly maybe to a certain extent, maybe in rebuilding efforts. But if you look at the landmass as, you know, as it's laid out, and as you mentioned, the footprint of this storm, I mean, it is going to wreak havoc. You just mentioned the massive rain, the storm surge, and all of the effects of the water, the wind, the threat of tornadoes, and everything else. This thing is potentially a massive catastrophe for the people of Florida, correct?
And I guess one more thing I just want to add here. It is, it seems to be pretty rare because, what, they had a bad hurricane in 1950, then the real bad one was in 1920. Is there a reason we normally don't see this kind of turn that hits the West Coast as frequently?
I don't think there's a particular reason. I think it's just the fact that it hasn't. A lot of these storms might come into the Gulf and then swing over to the, you know, to the west, toward the Mexican coast or toward Texas. This one is just, this is taking a different path, you know, kind of threaded the needle right across the western tip of Florida, and it's just continuing to make this very gentle right-hand curve. Mm. But I'm noticing that we have heavy rains underway from all the way from Orlando clear on down to Port St. Lucie, and so that's covering probably close to 100 miles. And we have hurricane force winds out at least 40 miles either side of the eye. So it's a strong storm in terms of wind speed, but also as a Category 4, it's producing a lot of overland flooding. And then there's always the storm surge. The storm surge now is looking to be probably north of the Everglades, East Naples, Bonita Springs, Cape Coral, some of those areas. That's where we might tend to see some of the largest storm surges within the next probably 5 or 6 hours. And a lot of that depends on the local tides, too.
And are we talking like over 10 feet?
In some places, depending on the – and I'm not totally familiar with the topography of that whole area, Gary, but, yeah, depending on the shape of the coast and how shallow – shelf is out there. Yeah, eight to 10 feet would not be out of the realm at all.
Okay. As we look forward to go beyond the next 12 hours or so, Ian expected to go back over the Atlantic. What's expected to happen there, and who will be affected?
Well, it may go over the Atlantic. A lot of the models have it continuing to move almost due north up the eastern seaboard. Now, again, these forecasts change from time to time, and I think the best thing to happen to us would be that the storm goes out over the Atlantic and just keeps on going and gets away from the U.S. mainland. I'm not sure that's going to happen, but there's a trough of low pressure in the eastern part of the country that we think it may actually try to follow it out to sea, because low pressure draws a hurricane toward it. So if it goes ahead and tags along behind that low pressure trough that's over the eastern and northeastern part of the country, we may get a little bit of a break, because the sooner it gets out over the ocean, the sooner it gets away from Florida.
All right. WBAP meteorologist Brad Barton. Brad, thank you so much
Thanks,
for
Brad.
Your valuable time this morning. We greatly appreciate it.
You bet, guys.
Thanks.
On the positive side, there's been plenty of warning for Hurricane Ian, on the negative, it took a different turn. Now expected to come ashore in a different place, but that does not mean that. Really, if you think about it, overwhelming majority of the landmass of Florida is going to be affected to some extent. And we'll see what happens, but it's going to make landfall later today.
Yeah, and you see that the cone that they have again, and it's looking at all the different models out there, shows it slightly going out over the Atlantic, then coming back in almost right on the border of Georgia and South Carolina, then going up really through again the eastern half of North Carolina, most of South Carolina, and it seems to be moving a little bit easterly from the last update that we have. Mm. But thanks, Brad Barton. We've been listening to Brad. We work with Brad, Brad, when we have bad weather here, when there's tornadoes, thunderstorms, things like that,
he's the go-to.
I'm looking out my window and Brad's on the radio.
Well, I'm going to what's I have. Called into Brad during a tornado warning from my home. I was actually, we were getting into our sheltered area, our interior closet, and went on to give him some perspective of where we were, because we had a tornado warning. It's right here in this neighborhood. And, but
I remember that.
And Brad's been covering this, in Tornado Alley here in North Texas for decades. Very knowledgeable and experienced, and I'll tell you, I know firsthand when there's something serious going on in the weather here, that everybody turns to Brad.
I know Brad said slight chance, but I hope that slight chance would come true and it would hit the Atlantic and then head out.
If that's the best case scenario, let's all hope that it happens that way.
866-90-RED-EYE.
It's the latest efforts of USDA to support fair and competitive meat and poultry markets.
The second iteration of our Strengthening the Packers and Stockyards Act really focused on making sure that in circumstances where producers have been retaliated against or discriminated, or whether there's been undue prejudice as a result of producers exercising their rights, that we gave producers a more balanced relationship with the companies that they do business with.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack told State Ag Department officials Tuesday that publishing of the proposed inclusive competition and marketing integrity rules will soon take place in the Federal Register, with public comment soon accepted after. A preview of the rules are available at the Agricultural Marketing Service website, www.ams.usda.gov. Also announced, a new $15 million agricultural competitive challenge to ramp up collaboration with state attorney generals on enforcement of competition laws. I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
Hey, it's Red Eye Radio. He's Eric Curley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. So I was telling you earlier, my friends in Tampa, from what I know, they all got out. A couple went to a hotel in St. Augustine, which is all the way across the other side and up north, 180 miles away from Tampa. Now that we see, that the eye is coming in lower, there were friends of mine and friends, acquaintances in Fort Myers, Sarasota and below that were saying, well, we don't know. I hope they got out because when you're talking about 140 mile an hour winds, the average house isn't going to hold up to that.
No, it's not. And beyond that, then you look at the power grid. You look at what resources are going to be available to anyone who is stranded in that area what the limitations of first responders is going to be. Those limitations are going to be great. And it will be, a long time in rebuilding, but just getting power restored is going to take a long, long time. Quite possibly. That is, again, the history of hurricanes. And when you talk about major hurricanes with this kind of footprint, as Brad was just telling us, it's a huge storm. It's a massive storm. And then you look at the strength of it and the potential for that rainfall, the storm surge, and everything involved.
1 to 2 feet of rain, storm surge, 140-mile-an-hour winds.
That's beyond catastrophe.
You know, I think about this because I was talking to my dad about it yesterday. He said, what would you do if you lived in Florida? I said, I would have been gone.
Yeah.
I said, there was about a mile and a half from my house last year. Remember I told you about this? Mm. There we had just, it was a normal day, and all of a sudden, we just got rain like you can't believe. Mm-hmm. And we hadn't gotten rain in a while, but we probably got, I don't know, it was one of those times where in a two-hour period, you get 5 or 6 inches of rain where it just dumps down on you. And there's a creek about a mile and a half from my house. And it goes down, you know, the creek is normally not much water in it, but you can see it can rise. You have to go down this little hill, then you come back up a hill, and the bridge is lower down. But the banks of the actual creek probably go up 30, 40 feet.
Mm-hmm.
It rained like this. Guy thought he could get across, you know, just that alone from rain. It picked his car up, and it took it probably, I don't know, 500, 600 feet into the woods, wrapping it around trees, and the guy was killed. Mm-hmm. Don't mess with Mother Nature. Don't mess with water. You just can't.
Well, and that's, you know, with massive storms, water is the biggest threat, from storm surge to flooding from rain. And again, all of that, that's the horrific part, is when people are trying to get out too late. And damage is already done. And hopefully those who could get out of the way have done so, or at least gotten to a better place, a higher mm-hmm. place, more inland. If they couldn't get completely out of the way of the storm, they could at least get to have a better vantage point and not have to be stranded without power and everything else. But our thoughts and prayers for everybody in the path of Hurricane Ian.
And the recovery, because from what it looks like, there could be people without power for a significant period of time.
Yeah, yeah.
And there could be just some, you know, massive damage. And I was watching one of the, weather channels yesterday, and can't remember who it was, but someone said, the problem is there's such huge population areas here.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
And this storm is so strong mm-hmm. that there are people that will stay behind.
Yeah.
And don't be surprised if the death toll is a lot more than people think it should be.
Right. Yeah.
And there, I can still remember when I moved to Florida and lived in Navarre. And so I knew a lot of people that had worked in Mobile and Pensacola in radio for the longest time. I always remember the stories about Camille that hit, you know, Gulfport, Mississippi, and the people that stayed in a hotel there. I believe that was a Cat 5 that came in. Mm-hmm. Just destroyed everything. They were all killed.
Mm-hmm.
Never forget that story. Mm-hmm. And you just don't mess with it. And I think there are people that have never been through it. And this was one of the concerns. And DeSantis talked about it yesterday. And by the way, Biden finally did call him. They finally had that was horrible optics yesterday when they were saying, well, why isn't he called the governor? Well, he's called the mayor. And I'm like, you're not going to win this. You know, we're not going to call the governor. We've talked to the mayors of Tampa and St. Petersburg, and I forgot what the other city was. It's like, no, you need to talk to the governor. You know, you need to have that, you know, we talk about brand or symbolism. You have to have that symbolism that we're talking to the person in charge of that state.
Well,
and he didn't want to do it.
And technically, there are things that that governor is going to have to ask from the federal government, and there has to be that communication between the state and the federal government, and it's not necessarily done directly with the president, but that conversation has to happen.
Has to happen.
And, you know, this is, again, quite ludicrous that you would even try and dance around it. It would be something as simple as, we know the governor's very busy, but the president does plan on talking to him. There will be a conversation with him.
And they didn't say that.
They wanted to be defiant about it.
Yeah,
as if he's not going to give Ron DeSantis the time of day.
Yeah. It was really bad. But DeSantis was saying 500,000 people have moved in here since COVID.
Mm-hmm.
These people have never experienced a hurricane. We're very concerned that they don't know what it actually is.
Mm-hmm.
That you know, they've seen it and everything else, but they just don't think it will happen to them.
Right.
And so there was no ands, ifs, and buts about it. There were mandatory evacuations, and they said it's mandatory.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're stuck there, there will be nobody there to help you. No police, no firefighters. Everybody's leaving.
On your smart speaker, say, play Red Eye Radio. And if you're really nice, she might. Red Eye Radio.
If you eat meat, she will deny you red eye. Going back to that story from last hour.
Or she just might say, no. I get that from Alexa all the time.
No.
Alexa, give me the forecast. No.
No.
What? Alexa is quiet quitting at my home.
All right, a couple of stories here. This one, the Republicans should be using this argument on a consistent basis.
Hmm.
And they're not. We hear things like, the general thing that what Biden has done at the border has helped the cartel. But you need to break it down as the Washington Times did yesterday. The migrant smuggling economy at the U.S. border now tops $20 billion. And the cartels have made in profit $2.6 billion over the last 12 months. This isn't drugs. This is just from controlling the routes illegal immigrants use, according to an analysis from the Washington Times. Both amounts are up substantially from the Trump and Obama years because more people are coming across the border and because they are paying higher prices. Mexican migrants are paying an average of $8,600 in total smuggling fees this year, according to the Washington Times database of smuggling cases. That's up roughly $2,000 from 2019, the last pre-pandemic year under the Trump administration. So look how much it's gone up from 2,000, 8,600. Migrants from El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala are paying about $11,500 for the trip, up from $9,000 in 2020 and $7,900 in 2029.
Under my plan of open borders, smuggling rates will necessarily skyrocket.
The rates are averages across the southern border. Migrants pay a little less in parts of Texas and a little more in California. There's an inflationary pressure on the numbers, said Ronald Vitello, a former chief of the Border Patrol. Everything else being equal, things are more expensive. Employees, gasoline, logistics, things are more expensive. The migrant surge that began at the start of the Biden administration is still going strong 20 months later. The numbers paint a grim picture of how the surge has fattened the wallets of the cartels that control the smuggling economy. One yardstick is called the mafia fee. That is literally the tax migrants pay to cartels to use their routes into the U.S.
Hmm.
Nearly every migrant pays, and the rate has increased $1,300 per person. That's up more than 50% from the Trump years. Now, the Border Patrol nabbed nearly 2.2 million people trying to sneak into the country from Mexico over the past 12 months. Subtracting repeat crossers
who may have paid only once for multiple attempts, adding in the estimated gotaways who avoid capture, and figuring conservatively that 90% of migrants pay the tax, the cartel tax, means the cartels have made $2.6 billion over the past year on crossing fees alone. That's free and clear profit. That doesn't include the smugglers bringing them in. That's just for using their routes to get to the border.
Right.
That's free and clear profit just for use of their smuggling routes. Any money they make from the rest of the smuggling journey, such as operating stash houses or coordinating foot guides and drivers, comes on top of that. Said the former head of the U.S. Border Patrol, they're printing money. All of this extra money is bad news for the United States, said former Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf. He told the Times podcast that the cash helps fuel cartels' other deadly activities, such as producing and smuggling fentanyl and the synthetic opioid that is responsible for record drug overdose deaths in the United States. It's all the same enterprise, he said. So the money they make off of the human trafficking, the $10,000 to $12,000 per head they're using to either import from China or make fentanyl and push that across the border. He said the cartels are cashing in under President Biden. Reasonable people can understand this as a shelf life. They're taking advantage of the maximum flow because they know it's not going to last. The $20 billion for the total smuggling economy includes the money migrants pay to the recruiters in their home countries, those who help shepherd them to the U.S. border, foot or raft guides who get them across the boundary, stash house operators who shelter them on the U.S. side, and drivers who take them deeper into the U.S. The gross domestic product of Honduras or El Salvador is less than $30 billion.
Yep.
A simple supply and demand curve might suggest prices should be falling. The pool of migrants is large, meaning a bigger supply for smugglers to share. That doesn't account for the cartel's monopolies. The cartels control ground and all the activities that go through here, including drug and migrant smuggling, and they set the prices they want. So there you go. And they just goes through, you know, the exact thing, all the specific details of how the different prices for everything else. But just on the routes alone, not anything else, the cartels made $2.6 billion this year, which they use to help fund their drug smuggling of fentanyl into the United States. That's what the United States government has done willingly.
Yep.
They did it.
Yep.
The Biden administration ordered this.
And we could also get into the how they enforce their price list. What happens at the border is when they get to the Texas border, the cartel then will tell them to call their relatives and get more money. And if they don't, many of those end up in a mass grave. That's how they enforce their rates at the cartel, who controls much of the U.S. border. This is ridiculous, and it was by design. We could decide as a nation to stop this, and we don't.
And also, smugglers now have adapted to new conditions at the border because the Biden administration invited illegal immigrants in.
Mm-hmm.
Now illegal immigrants from beyond Mexico are hoping that they are caught.
No,
that's
this is
the
what
easiest way into the United States.
This is what we were. I was saying, I've been saying it a few times over the last week and a half. They not only hope to be caught, they seek out, they look to find the agents. Because they know those border agents have their hands tied. They know once they're processed, boom, they're in. Even if it's temporary, they get legal status.
And the other thing that these former Border Patrol agents are talking about is the fact that most of these migrants can't afford this money. They don't make.
No.
And so they either owe relatives back in their own country or they're put to work by the cartels.
By the cartels.
And you can imagine what.
And if that's, you know, again, there are mass graves in Mexico. Because the practice is you call your relative, you get more money, or you don't get in.
The Times database uses affidavits filed by Border Patrol agents, Custom and Border Patrol officers, and Homeland Security investigations agents in border smuggling cases in which they are witnesses, namely migrants who are being smuggled. That's how they find out. They actually get the affidavits from the Border Patrol. What are you paying? What are you doing? The authorities often elicit the smuggling fees the migrant pay and include the information in the affidavit.
Right.
The Times calculations are based on those numbers, so you know where they're getting them from. But, I mean, it's a disaster. But understand what's happening. Understand that we are funding Biden by what he did. The president and the Democrats all support. The Democrats support the funding of the cartels for the human smuggling in order to get people into the United States, and they're taking those profits to help bring fentanyl into the country, which is killing a record number of Americans.
Yep.
It's absolute insanity, and that's what's going on. In another story here, a majority of Americans say they're being forced to search for extra work as inflation increases the cost of living, including according to a recent survey from the workforce service platform Blue Crew, 69% of Americans say they are now actively looking for extra work hours, while 68% say are reevaluating their current work situation.
Well, because at some point you got to do something. If it is costing the average household thousands of dollars a year, there's only one way to afford that, and that's work longer.
Yep. And so there, 7 out of 10 Americans are looking for more hours, extra work, more money.
Yeah.
And, you know, you and I looked at, who was it? They looked at the polling that was done on the toss-up districts. You know, we look at the generic congressional ballot, and the generic congressional ballot shows Republicans up one or two or Democrats up one or two. What it fails to notice is the fact that when you take the congressional districts that are a toss-up right now, it's plus 24 for the Republicans. When you see that 7 out of 10, if this is anywhere close, are looking to work more hours, which is not where America wants to be right now, looking to work more.
Right.
And you see that in those toss-up congressional districts, it's plus 24 for Republicans. The reason it looks so close nationwide is in those blue districts, as you and I brought up the other day, Democrats lead by 34 points, where in the Republican districts, it's only, I think, what was it, 21 or 22 or 23%, something like that. But in the toss-up districts, it's plus 24 leaning Republican. And so when you see that, when you see inflation, when you see these kind of surveys, Jim Garrity wrote in National Review, and also he said the many pollsters still using registered voters, as they should not be doing right now, and softening the definition of likely voters is his claim.
You know, it's interesting. You and I have talked about that for years because there was a standard definition. Based on the recent voting behavior and history of those individuals. And so are they now qualifying in what would be the standard? Have them say that they're likely to vote? Based on a pledge to a pollster? Because it has to, the reason they set it as to look back at their, again, recent behavior in terms of voting, was that, okay, they've had a pattern of voting and that's likely to continue. But saying they're going to vote, that's just a pledge. And without the pattern, what does it mean?
I'd like some more investigation into that. Have the pollsters changed their definition of likely voters? That would be, that's his allegation.
I'd love to do some reading on methodology. And,
so would I.
And how each of them qualify.
And how it's changed over the last, you know, let's say 5 years.
Right.
866-90-RED-EYE.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Just looking right now at a satellite image of Ian. Wow. You can tell that the eye is definitely tightening up here, which it's a Cat 4, by the way, overnight. It went from 120 to now 140 mile an hour. Consistent winds out there. Will land south of Tampa, though. Just reading some updates that... That means that the storm surge, hopefully in Tampa, will not be as great as originally expected. But the storm surge in areas south, you know, you go from Sarasota down to Fort Myers, could be a lot greater. So it's not a good situation in any way. I just hope that everybody got evacuated here, because this thing is just going to be. It's going to be catastrophic. There's no other word to use for it.
Yeah, so. Massive rain amounts right now being predicted. The storm surges, as you mentioned, the storm surge is going to be massive. And then that, you know, again, is a situation that we've already had Ian spawning tornadoes several hours ago. Started seeing some of the images come out from some of the damage from tornadoes being spawned by the effects of Ian, that will continue as Ian makes landfall and crosses Florida. And, of course, make sure that if you're in that area, you keep your media on, keep your alerts on, and stay aware.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.